the big question in our minds, in everyone's mind, is, are you going to win? The SEC is dropping a lawsuit on Uniswap. This is absolutely monumental, a massive escalation when it comes to the prosecution of crypto, and more specifically this time, DeFi. We have Hayden Adams, the founder of Uniswap, on the podcast today.
Two different reactions. One could be, I'm scared. They're coming for the most beloved, most enjoyed DeFi protocol with a United States founder with offices in the United States. Oh no, what are we doing? Where is future DeFi going? An alternative reaction is they are coming for our best example. They are coming for our best people with our most with the most amount of support. I am personally in the latter camp where I think Hayden Adams is going to take the SEC to the absolute ringer. And because they represent Uniswap Labs and Uniswap the protocol represents the purest form of DeFi. And so at the very least, once this probably long court case wraps up, Uniswap will be claimed the victor, I hope, and we will actually have some strong precedent about some of the things that makes DeFi tick.
Well, let's go. It's fight time, and Hayden Adams seems ready to fight. He's going to be right on. But before we get to the conversation, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our number one recommended exchange. Also, engage with the SEC in a court battle. Kraken. Go create an account.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way. Along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Welcome to Consensus 2024. Consensus is one of the biggest hubs for all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3. This May, Consensus is celebrating 10 years of decentralizing the future. Going to Consensus means being in good company with over 15,000 attendees from over 100 countries. You have the opportunity to learn directly from the architects and advocates representing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, along with the teams from popular layer twos like Mantle, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, and others. But Consensus is more than just discussions and presentations. Badge holders get access to witness 10 professional karate combat fights and one unprofessional one between myself and Nick Carter. For the visionaries, PitchFest is your spotlight, presenting a stage for the most promising early-stage Web3 companies. And for the devs, the hackathon offers a unique chance to build your next project or take your existing project to the next level. Immerse yourself in hundreds of side events and hacker houses scattered around Austin. Register for Consensus 2024 today and save 20% with code BANKLESS. Bankless Nation, the SEC versus crypto round like 74, but this time a little bit different. This time versus Uniswap Labs. Hayden, Uniswap recently got a Wells notice from the SEC. Can you shed a little bit more light as to the nature of that Wells notice? What is the SEC concerned about? What are they coming to talk to you guys about? Why are they delivering you guys a Wells notice?
Yeah, so, you know, this gets at like the heart of everything that we do. You know, normally it's up to Congress to set the rules, and then it's up to the SEC to, you know, enforce those rules. But we're in this kind of strange regulation by enforcement era, where Congress has not set clear rules. And in that absence, the SEC is essentially taking very aggressive stances and basically trying to shut down crypto and going after all sorts of projects. And, you know, Uniswap Labs and Uniswap, the protocol is the, you know, largest protocol in DeFi. And I think they ultimately think that it shouldn't exist, that DeFi shouldn't exist. And so, you know, they're bringing a case against one of the best actors in the space. And I think we've seen that as a pattern, right? They didn't really go after FTX until it was way too late, but they went after Coinbase. Now they're going after us. You know, we think that we're on the right side of history. We think that, everything that we are, you know, a startup, one of our first hires was our chief legal officer, employee number like 6 or 7, which is unprecedented in startup world. And, you know, we've been very careful to comply with the law since the very beginning, in the absence of very clear laws. And so, you know, this is sort of like the next step in this regulation by enforcement journey. But we think that we have a really good case. We think we're going to win.
Were there any communications between Uniswap Labs and the SEC prior to the Wells Notice, or was the Wells Notice the first instance of any sort of communication between the company and the SEC?
Yeah, so, you know, they've been going, like, I think that you probably saw, like, there was, like, a Wall Street Journal article back in 2021, I think, maybe it was. So there's been, like, years of kind of, you know, collecting information, et cetera. But at the same time, like, you know, they sort of investigate everyone in crypto, right? You know, it's been reported they're investigating the Ethereum Foundation. It's been reported, you know, almost everyone in crypto has been investigated by the SEC. So it doesn't really mean a lot. But, you know, I think that, you know, the difference here is that we've now received a Wells Notice, which means that they're intending to bring a case. By the way, when you know, you did ask earlier, and I wasn't trying to avoid when you asked, you know, what the case is about. What the case is about, you know, essentially is three big things. And, you know, there's going to be, I'm sure there'll be a lot more details public, especially once or if/when they actually bring a case. Right. The Wells Notice is sort of just a first step to getting there. But it essentially gets at three core issues. The first one is whether or not, you know, our interfaces, both the wallet and the web app, are a broker. And this is the thing that they just lost in court on, like, 2 weeks ago.
With Coinbase, right?
With Coinbase, where, yeah. You know, and they didn't just, like, lose in court. It didn't, like, go to trial and they lost in court. Right. It lost at the earliest possible stage that you can lose at.
It was a judge threw it out. Yeah. So yeah. It basically wasn't even worth
the whole thing
trial
was invalid.
Right. It wasn't even worth, like, discussing in court. It was so clearly not a broker. It got thrown out.
It was
very,
yo, don't waste our time type of message.
Yeah. It was like, it's not worth discovery. It's not worth, you know, arguments. It's just like, this thing is clearly not a broker. And our wallet is very similar to the Coinbase wallet. Like, almost, like, we have, like, a, you know, probably fewer features, but, and then our interface, you know, is again very similar, at least in terms of how it comes to you know, trading and interacting with tokens.
The interface, so, meaning the Uniswap front end, like Uniswap.app, the website is the interface, is what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then it's going to get at, you know, whether or not, so we think, you know, very obvious win there. I mean, we think obvious win every step of the way, but that's sort of one of them. And then next kind of big bucket would be, you know, is Uni a security? You know, there's a pretty strict definition of what is a security. You have to meet, you know, all the prongs of the Howey test. And we're pretty, you know, and, you know, we're very confident that it is not. So, you know, there's no contract between, you know, labs and the community of hundreds of thousands of people. You know, the tokens were airdropped to the community for free. There's no, you know, investment of money. You know, I think that, you know, you can go through all of it, but the point here is, it's not surprising that they're bringing this case, despite how obvious it is to us that it's not, because they also think ETH is a security, and they're going after ETH, or we think, you know. Right. At least that was sort of, there was some news around that in the past few weeks, I'm pretty sure you guys covered. And so, you know, if they think, they basically want to, you know, dramatically expand the definition of what is a security to encompass all digital assets. And or that's at least my impression. And, you know, a very, like, kind of salient example here is that when you, I don't know if you saw that, there was a, I'm sure you did, but there was a court hearing where a congressman asked, you know, are Pokemon card securities?
Right. Richie Torres.
And the answer was no. But then it was like, well, if you put a Pokemon card on a blockchain, is it a security? And it's like, well, maybe, I don't know.
It was like, facts and circumstances.
Yeah, but it's like, it's just a file format. It's like, you know, if it's like, it's so obvious that the difference between whether or not something is a security is not whether or not it lives on a blockchain. You know, the vast majority of tokens are very clearly not securities. You know, commodities, you know, ETH, Bitcoins, you know, stable coins, meme coins, right? Like, whatever it is, there's just, it's very clear. So we also think very, very good case there. Final one gets at really the heart of DeFi. And open source code, you know, it's basically, is the Uniswap protocol a unregistered securities exchange?
You think that they are going after that as well? The actual smart contract code on chain that is, you know, basically, you guys don't have any access keys to?
I think it's not, there's no, I mean, I think it's more like, you know, is Uniswap Labs operating an unregistered securities exchange because this protocol exists? Are we somehow, like, managing
it? Because they publish code.
It? Yeah.
They help.
Yeah, exactly. So it gets at the heart of, like, you know, publishing code operating an exchange? We don't think so. So it's really going to go, you know, and this is where when I talk about like this probably ends in the Supreme Court or whatever, it gets at these like very fundamental things. And we think that when you deploy open source code to a decentralized blockchain that is not operating or managing an exchange, it's very obvious to me. I'm not a lawyer, but I have a rudimentary understanding of the technology, which is something that maybe they don't. I will add on to this one that I think that they know this as well, probably, because there was this exchange rulemaking. Not sure if you guys follow that, but basically like earlier this year, or I guess last year, they tried to redefine what an exchange was to be like dramatically broader, to the point where like it captures all sorts of things, like all sorts of like various systems for transmitting information and what. Like, it's just like very broad redefinition that, you know, is going to have to go through and would, you know, I assume if they eventually tried to like go through with that would also be challenged in court. But you know, the fact that they kind of had to try to read it, like they sort of in parallel to trying to bring a case and claim it already is one, they're also trying to redefine what an exchange means, because I think they ultimately know that it's not, but they're bringing the case anyway. So, and that's again, just my impression.
Do you want this to go to the Supreme Court just because like, hey, let's just settle this?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by want. What I want is, I think that the technology that we build is good for the world. We think it's empowering. We think it, you know, creates fairer, you know, more transparent systems, more secure systems. And we think that our technology should be used and widely adopted. And if that means we have to take this to the Supreme Court, we will. We would rather not have to, and that, you know, we'd rather, you know, more clear laws be put in place that make, you know, make it clear that this technology is legal. And again, we you know, think that laws are already clear there, but we would rather like more, you know, that to be made more explicit versus having to, you know, take it to the Supreme Court. But, you know, if I have to wear unisocks to the Supreme Court in 3 years as the culmination of all this, that's where we're going to end up.
Please do. I mean, 3 years, what a whole bunch of wasted time, though, I would say.
And it's going to be like tens of millions of dollars. It's going to be crazy. And it's going to be, you know, thousands of hours of time. So it is really, you know, disappointing and frustrating. I will say that, you know, the community's sort of support and reaction on you know, Twitter and more broadly was really motivating, because it is like a really long battle, and today's like, and like, you know, we're kind of, you know, we're sort of like motivated. We stand by what we do and we're excited to defend ourselves. And I think to some degree, like this sort of like potential looming threat versus just like, we know what we're up against and being able to talk about it and face it head on is really nice. And sort of like a good moment for us. But at the same time, it's like also really, you know, frustrating. And if we were a smaller, like a lot of, for a lot of startups, this would just like completely shut them down and they wouldn't be able to operate. And so there's sort of this like chilling effect on other people. But so that's part of why we want to really be vocal and in public and defend ourselves.
Oh, can you talk about this? Because it wasn't long ago when you were that kind of the bright-eyed startup founder in DeFi. It really wasn't that long ago. And I remember having discussions with you in the early days of that. And like, I'm wondering how what you think this does to US-based entrepreneurs, crypto entrepreneurs, DeFi entrepreneurs, people who were exactly in your shoes, you know, 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah. So look, I love living in New York. I live, you know, it's my home, and I you know, love, you know, the country that we live in. And at the same time, like I would never recommend at this point, anyone who's starting a crypto project to, you know, base their operations here. I will say that like there's sort of a broader thing, which is, you know, even if like, it's not just like, are you based there? It's like, do you have any US users? Like there is sort of this broader nexus, right? They can still go, you know, if you have US users, they still can kind of claim and go after you. And so I'd say that like, there's definitely, it seems like there's this desire by the SEC to just like shut it down and be like, we don't want this thing to exist. Whereas like, it's very obvious to me that, you know, this technology is here to stay, right? You know, it's like kind of almost imagine, you know, in the earliest days of the internet, and you don't even have to imagine, it's actually what happened. In like the very earliest days of the internet, there were efforts to be like, oh, like people can just like, you know, like buy and sell things on the internet. Like that's horrible. Like we should, like that should be illegal, right? So there were efforts to like stop e-commerce, and you know, imagine what would have happened. And then what ultimately happened is almost like a safe harbor-esque thing was put in place, because this was under like Bill Clinton era, which was basically like, well, for this technology, like this technology is clearly so powerful, we don't want it to all go abroad. We want it to be built in the US. And what did that allow? It allowed like all the tech companies to be built in the United States. And so you have like the Googles and the Apples and the Microsofts, in part because like the internet was recognized as an important enough technology to give it some space to grow, while the, you know, the things that came around it were really complex. What we're seeing, unfortunately, with crypto, which is very obviously like the next evolution, where the internet, you know, democratized information and access, you know, made information more programmable and accessible. And what we're doing with blockchains is make value and ownership more kind of universal and standardized and accessible. But what we're seeing this time around is essentially a few like rogue government agencies, or like a rogue government agency and a few kind of like, even like not, I don't even know if it's the majority, but like politicians essentially for political reasons, like trying to shut it down and not recognizing like its importance to the future of this country. And so it's really not good for the country. I think that like ultimately, you know, like the internet, it's inevitable and it's just being made more painful. And what you'll end up happening is a lot of the innovation will start happening abroad, and then like the taxes are going to other countries and whatever, you know, all that. And so it's not good for America, in my opinion. But it is.
I completely agree. So I'm just curious your take on why they're doing it then. Like, is it we just have different leadership at the helm, right? So like my parallel is, you look at the 90s internet, it was birthed in the US, and mostly all we needed from legislators and lawmakers is just to kind of get out of the way of the entrepreneurs in the US. I mean, it's helpful to get some regulation, but can you imagine if the FTC, for example, regulates, you know, communications in the US, if they went to Google and brought them to court in like circa 1999, imagine how bad that would be for American internet entrepreneurs. And it seems to be the approach that the US is taking to the internet of value. I'm just curious, like, why? Is it because the US has too much vested interest in their financial system that they didn't have for a communications protocol? Like, why is this happening in crypto?
Yeah, I think that like sometimes in crypto, we tend to like try to reduce everything down to like, well, it's like all this like one massive coordinated thing. Whereas I think that what is really happening is you have a combination of factors. So you have like, I'd say like a kind of a slightly like a kind of like a rogue government agency with political, you know, that is sort of more dictated, their strategy is more dictated by like creating headlines, you know, bringing cases against Kim Kardashian or whatever, versus going after, you know, real bad actors that are harming people. Or not saying, I don't, again, not kind of wading into that specific thing, but I'm just saying that like there's sort of like a political motivation, from what I can tell, for you know, the SEC. And then I'd say within Congress and whatever, there's like varied levels of support and interest. I think a lot of it is like, to some degree, it's almost like, some of it is almost like disinterest or deference, or just like, okay, we'll let them deal with it. And like, then some of it is, you know, probably more, you know, politically motivated. And then some of it is probably like, you know, misunderstanding or ignorance around the technology. There is certainly some support. I think some of it is like, there's sort of like, I think the one thing that I hope for our industry in this moment is that we can do a little bit of a better job telling our story. I think what we've seen historically is that a lot of other people have sort of been able to portray crypto in a certain type of way. Probably like one of the biggest moments in like shifting of crypto narrative was actually like, you know, almost like was like actually when like Meta at that time, Facebook, you know, announced Libra and was going to do their stablecoin to compete with the US dollar. And I think that was like a moment where suddenly like, for an entire contingent of the political spectrum, it almost like associated like crypto with like big tech, whereas what we actually are is more of a like a grassroots kind of bottoms up movement, which is often more in line. And so I think that there's like these like a lot of you know, politics is just like knee jerk tribalism and reactions and, oh, like my side thinks this one thing about this one thing, so I think this thing too. Like what we really need to do is better tell our story about how we help people. And I think that like one really interesting thing that came out of that I've seen in the past 2 days, and I tweeted about this yesterday, was that shockingly, to some degree, but not totally entirely shocking, like the media reporting around this case, the mainstream media reporting, was actually some of the best that we've ever had. Like a few years ago, it would have been like, yo, like, you know, crypto project, yo, which is, you know, primarily used for illegal money laundering and whatever, like, you know, now sued for obviously, like, versus like this time around, like, you have, you know, the Fortune piece was really good. You also have like things like the Wall Street Journal explaining that this is an automated system that runs on a blockchain, whereas like early, like you have like a much higher quality. Some of the like reporting around it has actually given us a more fair representation. It's not perfect, but it's like, I think people are starting to, like, more and more people are starting to recognize that you know, there is like a more important story here, that there's a more important technology here. And so I think in the past sometimes it's like very adversarial stance crypto takes against the world, right, which can make sense in certain contexts. But I think at the same time, like, part of it is we actually have to like still build bridges and like explain, like, when you build something that is like good for the world, like if we believe what we're doing is good, we believe it's empowering. And so when you do that, it's like part of it is just about how can we explain things to people in a way that they you know, understand, in a way that they recognize the value of. And the more we do that, you know, the more like the more support we have. And so like and I think that like there is some reality to like the court of public opinion and like just like the like public sentiment around crypto, you know, voter sentiment around crypto. It doesn't necessarily, like, there's still like going to be an ongoing court case that will play out, and the what will matter most there is the law, and we think we're right there as well, and on the right side of, we think we're on the right side of the law. But when it comes to like the, you know, the world's adoption of crypto and sort of the understanding by policymakers and et cetera, like the more, you know, voters care about it, the more clear the benefits are to people, which we know, you know, and understand, but I think haven't always made the best case to the world about.
Can I just read the Fortune title that you tweeted out, Hayden? It's The SEC wants to sink one of finance's most innovative technologies. That's from Fortune. That's a great headline.
I do want to
zoom out though, and because while the education has gotten better, and as evidenced by this Fortune article, this brand Uniswap and this court case with the SEC is going to become one of the bigger court cases that will be in the halls of crypto history. And yet there's still like plenty of work to do about like public understanding about what is exactly going on in the crypto world. So like maybe with, there's going to be like, I'm sure, Hayden, like some Web2 TradFi reporters, journalists, like listening, yes, to this just to like get their grasp as to what's going on here, who actually still might not be familiar with the nuances of a decentralized exchange on a crypto protocol versus a centralized exchange like Coinbase. And so the SEC is suing Uniswap Labs, the LLC inside of the United States. There's also this Uniswap protocol on Ethereum as a decentralized exchange. And this is like the nuance that we have been trying to educate about for the outside world for like years and years and years now. So maybe just like starting and zooming all the way out and starting from base principles, like what should people know about the differences of this structure and the Uniswap Labs relationship with the Uniswap protocol and how it's similar and also very different from like actual centralized exchanges like the NASDAQ or Coinbase?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, a lot of like the current world of tech and finance and whatever relies on trust, right? Users need to trust the institutions that they're interacting with, right? If you're interacting with a bank, you really need to trust the bank. If you're interacting with, you know, whatever platform, right? Because the platforms themselves tend to have full control over, you know, the assets underlying them, and over the, you know, the logic of the systems that they're building. And the like transparency for those systems comes through the form of things like audits, quarterly audits every 3 months, you know, or public disclosures in the form of and these are real systems that do help create better transparency within a world of centralization. Part of what is and I think that you know, part of what blockchains and crypto enables is things that, you know, it kind of goes from like Google had this model of like don't be evil. And I think crypto could take on this model of like can't be evil, right? Because we can build systems that don't rely on the goodwill of, you know, centralized entities for people to know what's going to happen with their money or whatever it is their assets. Instead, we can build systems where anyone with access to the internet can verify the integrity, can verify the underlying accounting, can choose where their funds are custodied, So, right, like when you interact with a centralized exchange, you also have to custody your funds with that centralized exchange. There's sort of this like all-in package. You're sort of trusting that system. But here you can kind of like separate out and break out the system into components, and people can choose to self-custody. They can choose to custody with someone who, whatever entity they trust, while still being able to, you know, trade with other people, as an example. I think that, you know, what the part of what this all gets at is like, you know, this sort of internet analogy I gave before, which is like much of what the internet did is create a standard set of essentially what are called protocols to standardize how you transmit and interact with information. This is part of what enabled this is part of why what makes the internet empowering, right? So an example of this is that, you know, you have this protocol called SMTP, which is the protocol that underlies email. And so the reason that Gmail can speak to, I can barely think of another email client, Hotmail, which used to exist. Gmail is pretty popular. But the reason that like different email, or ProtonMail, that's a good one. So the reason that different email clients can speak to each other is because they're using standard underlying infrastructure that is sort of inherently like, you know, neutral. And that's what allows like anyone to create a competing email client, but they all work together. The world of like ownership of assets and finance is very different from this. Every single and by the way, that system creates, you know, very good competition. If you had to like own, if you had to recreate SMTP to create an email client, then it would be much, much harder to compete with Gmail or to compete with whatever the early email clients were that ultimately lost to Gmail. When you have in the world of like asset ownership of assets and finance, it's so different from the internet. By the way, it also, you know, there's email, but it's also like this HTTPS, which is like why all websites work in all browsers, right? And so when you get to the world of finance and ownership, it's so different from the internet. It's so siloed. The technology is so like old and broken, and it doesn't fit together. There's all these like different regulations and rules put in place to try to create some sense of safety within a system that is like extremely opaque, extremely outdated, extremely non-standardized, right? Every different asset class has a completely different set of rules, a completely different set of, you know, infrastructure. And in crypto, we have this sort of standardized, you know, protocols for how you like transmit and interact with value. And that's sort of like the basis of the technology. And what you can do when you have that is you can create like better, fairer systems on top of it. And so examples are like for the Uniswap protocol, you know, it dramatically lowers the barrier of entry to creating a marketplace, to creating liquidity, to trading. You know, it's sort of like, that sort of gets at like, you know, what is the difference between like the world of like, you know, like movies getting launched in theaters, like one by one, like how hard was it to create a movie versus how hard is it to create a YouTube video? And what is like, what has that enabled? It's enabled all way more people to create content and monetize it and access it. And so it's the same thing. Like the world of finance has very bad competition. It doesn't have good like competitive dynamics. It doesn't have good technology. It doesn't have, you know, there's very high barriers to entry. And so what we're trying to do with decentralized finance is to, you know, fix that problem and to dramatically improve it. And in addition, like, you know, create like radical transparency by, you know, blockchains. You have like all of the code, all of the transaction histories are in real time publicly available. So, you know, we think it's really powerful. We think it's really good for the world. And so that's why we stand by it.
And to really drive this point home, what's Uniswap's lab's relationship with the Uniswap protocol and all the people trading on it and all the assets inside of it on top of the Ethereum blockchain?
Yeah, so, you know, something that I'll answer that, but something to like analogize here is like, if you remember like years back, like or even like last year, for example, like Reddit closed off some of their API and a lot of projects built on top of Reddit had to shut down or they made their API more expensive. And like a few years back, Twitter closed their API or changed their API and a lot of projects that were building on top of Twitter, very hard for me to say the word X, you know, Uniswap X is the best X. But derailing myself. But the Twitter API closed off, and all these projects, you know, that were building on top of the Twitter API were essentially, you know, what we would say in crypto, were rugged. They could no longer operate. The cool thing about the Uniswap protocol, right, is that there's nothing that I can do to the protocol that you, David, cannot, right? Like the, it's simply open source code published to a blockchain that is running, autonomously. The only way to shut it down would be to shut down every blockchain node. The only way, and so it's not something that I'm operating. It's not something that I'm running. It's just a piece of software that runs automatically, and then different people can interact with it in different ways. And so we have our interface, but the cool thing about it is that even though we have like maybe the most popular interface because we put a lot of work into making it really nice, there's dozens of other interfaces that are also integrated with the same protocol. And if our interface had to shut down, there would be other interfaces that would continue running. And that kind of speaks at why this is better, right? Like we built this protocol, but we don't have exclusive access or exclusive rights to it. It speaks at part of why it's different, like why it requires different thought, different rules, different regulations, because if we can't prevent someone else from building an interface, that like inherently creates a more fair playing field.
Yeah, the Uniswap protocol doesn't enshrine your front end any more than it does anyone else's. It actually doesn't even know that there's a Uniswap Labs company that's built a front end, as it's differentiated from any of the other front ends that also tap into Uniswap.
Yeah, we're like a software development shop. We've done some of the core development of the protocol there's started to be more other people contributing to that, and then in addition, we also have built an interface to the protocol that we run, but many, many other people have done the same.
It's kind of an interesting exercise that I think people have to get their heads wrapped around. So it's like, even if some regulatory agency like the SEC forced Uniswap Labs to shut down, okay, in order to shut down the quote unquote like Uniswap protocol that you're talking about, the code that's deployed on chain, how far would they actually have to go? You have to shut down Ethereum. You have to block US users' ability to access the internet. You have to like shut down the internet itself. How far is the SEC prepared to go to like control this decentralized exchange? That's kind of the question.
SWAT teams entering people's homes.
Right. You're going to come get all the Bankless listeners listening to this episode? Like,
yeah, which gets at why like this like sort of like the rules are clear, we just need to enforce them, like narrative from the SEC is like kind of ludicrous. Right? It's very clear this technology is so different, and it's the sort of scale of like you can just go after a centralized thing and shut it down, but you can't here, and so it's very clear the rules have to be different, and it's very clear that so it's pretty crazy.
My favorite way to sort of understand, because I think what happens in sort of mainstream consciousness is people associate like just the average American. And by the way, you're going to have the opportunity here as this escalates to make your case in front of the American people, which David reframed this for me a bit. It's like, at first I was incredibly disappointed. Like, how could America do this? What's wrong with our regulators? Thank you.
How dare you touch Hayden Adams?
Yeah, how dare you? Okay, another Adams, all right? But now I'm just like, wow, this is a tremendous opportunity to make the case for Uniswap. Who better than Uniswap to actually be brought to the forefront to make their case in front of the American people? I think people right now have a tendency to associate crypto with the bad crypto actors as well, right? So SBF. But what Uniswap provides is SBF can't F you up, because it's Uniswap. There is no SBF in the Uniswap protocol. And you have the opportunity to tell that story. Your tweet yesterday was really cool. You said this: when you build technology that improves people's lives, you don't need to hide. You don't need to hide. I hope that is still true in America, Hayden. And I want to ask you, maybe just address the average American citizen who has no idea about SMTP protocols and how the internet was made. They just enjoy like the fruits of the internet. Okay. What's your case to the average American, the average, Joe Public, where you get to say, this is why Uniswap improves your life, why it's good for the world?
Yeah, look, we're doing simply, and it's in the early, DeFi is like an early industry. It's in its like infancy. It's like the internet, 20, maybe more like 30 years ago. So we're in the earliest stages. But what the internet ultimately did is it empowered people. And not every aspect of the internet was good, right? The internet has been used for good and bad, but like very few people could argue that it didn't provide far more, far greater access to information, and was like a fundamentally empowering technology. And what we're trying to do, the mission of you know, of what DeFi is and what Uniswap is really trying to do that for a world, for like, you know, the world of like, of essentially finance and other forms of like ownership and digital ownership. We're trying to make, you know, it more accessible, to make it more fair, to level the playing field, and to, you know, improve the technology behind it. And we think that's like a worthy cause and a good mission. And really, you know, when you look at it's not like it's in the early days. And when something is early, it's like inefficient, right? And so when something is early, it's, you know, and I think when people hear about crypto and they hear about it in this way of like, oh, I heard Bitcoin burns more energy than Norway or whatever, right? But then like, you know, I don't know but like what you have to understand is that like this technology is in its early stages, right? Ethereum, you know, is now whatever 99% more energy efficient than it was 2 years ago with proof of stake. That's just an example, and I know people kind of even in crypto don't like that example on both sides. But whatever, the point is that like part of our job, you know, as crypto people, is to speak to people who don't know and understand everything that we do. And so what I'd say is that like, again, this is in its earliest stages, but it's competing with, you know, it's competing with like massive entrenched financial interests, right? Like today, the world of finance. And much of the, you know, and what much of the internet, which is what we sometimes call Web 2, is like, you know, controlled by very few dominant players. And it's, there's some really like negative, like, okay, a very simple example is that you put your money in a bank, they pay you like 0.025% interest. They take like, you know, they make like 5% interest or something, right? There's just this massive like value redistribution from like society and people, like everyday people, towards like the people that own the like systems that you know are sort of entrenched. And part of what we're trying to do is build systems that you know allow you know people to really own their own assets and have access to the same opportunities. You know, we want people, you know, we want everyone to have access to the same yield opportunities that banks currently you know take with other people's money, right? Like things like that. We're trying to build like a more level system, a more level playing field, and you know, yes, it's early on. Yes, there are like things that we have to figure out to make it better, to make it you know more reliable, et cetera, to make it faster. It can be you know like the same way like dial up was slow and kind of expensive relative to like you know the fiber we have today or whatever. Like they, you know, there are parts of crypto you might like use it and it'd be like, oh, this is kind of weird and slow and I don't quite get the user experience. And we're working, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, literally tens of thousands of people around the world are working to make it cheaper, faster, more accessible, easier to use. And like the end result of what we're working towards in you know, my view is a far better, far fairer system that, you know, and so it there is sort of like, there are steps along the way. And I think part of what we have to do is show people like, you know, one thing to note is that like a lot of people trust their, like in the United States, for example, a lot of people trust their bank for better or for worse. And I think we saw maybe, you know, some stuff last year that indicated some, you know, banks are maybe at risk as well. But, you know, a lot of other countries around the world, people don't trust their banks and they don't trust their currencies. And so having access to, you know, like today, there are many countries, you know, where currencies are being devalued at a very rapid rate. And honestly, even the US dollar sort of has some like pretty significant inflation, but ignoring that, I think that like there are countries where like inflation is in like the 100% per year or more. And so like access to these tools are already helping people around the world, right? Like Uniswap and Ethereum is already like saving people's lives in countries that have far worse financial systems than we do today. And so to throw all of that out and to try to like make it really hard to build is actually really damaging to people around the world who don't have the same opportunities. So that's, you know, and then ultimately the end result maybe further out is that like it should be better for everyone.
One of the parts of your tweet towards the end says, the SEC's mission is to protect investors, maintain fair and orderly and efficient markets, facilitate capital formation. This is a noble mission, you say. And you also say, I argue that Uniswap does a far better job of this today than the SEC. And this is one of the core premises of this entire industry. We actually regulate safety into the code. We protect investors via code. We say, rather than saying let's not be evil, let's say let's actually like tie our hands to the mast and enforce no one to be able to be evil using using code. And I think this is why so many economies on the long tail benefit from applications like Uniswap and systems like Ethereum, is because of this structure. Given the opportunity, do you see this as an opportunity to actually like leverage this point in court? How might you elevate this during this like ongoing proceedings with the SEC?
Yeah, look, I think that, you know, like regulation, I wanted to put that in there. One, it's like kind of, well, I guess like the main point, yeah, sure, but the main thing there is really that like, I wanted to highlight like the mission of the SEC is actually like a, in theory, a good, like it's a good mission. Like you want,
we're on the same mission, right?
It's honestly like a, maybe in some ways a more accurate, like we have our own mission statement, but like to some degree, I actually like it almost even more for us than our current one. Like it's a pretty good mission statement, right? Like, you know, it's about making the system more fair and better and protecting people. And, you know, but like the way that it is enacted in the centralized system, it's the only way you can enact it in the centralized system is you, like if something is centralized and closed off, you have to force people to disclose things. But when you have, you know, and so like disclosures are a good thing. And, you know, but like when you have, but you have to recognize the technology and the like, it, you can't just like square peg every round hole, right? Like it's current, like it can be a square peg for a square hole, but Uniswap is like a different thing. And so if you have an entire system that's aimed to like disclose how something works, and then Uniswap has like entirely open source available code. And when you have like systems that try to like reveal like the balances on people's balance sheets, and then Uniswap, like, every transaction in the entire history is public on chain in real time. Like the rules are like, you can't just like Uniswap is more transparent than you know, in how it works and how it functions in the balances and the transaction history than like almost anything that has ever come before it. And so
if
to kind
in
of try
some
to like
way,
fit it into this other regime that is designed for like, you know, creating transparency within opaque centralized system, that just doesn't make sense.
In some way, if regulators were doing their job, they'd push more traffic and more liquidity to Uniswap. Then it's, you know,
you know, yeah, or they would like, you know, try to create like best practices for what, you know, for like, you know, the security auditing for protocols and for, you know, like. Or like for how to like, you know, like the ways and formats in which you publish like the code, like there's things they could do that would like, but yes, I think in the long run,
there's such appetite to partner with regulators to like toward the same mission, and they're not opening those doors. But Hayden, this has been like fantastic. Thank you for debriefing on this. I think we have one last question for you. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, look, honestly, the thing that makes me most ready for it, is just how like the community reaction, the community support, when we, you know, announced this, when we talked about it publicly, was really motivating and really inspiring, and is really appreciated. Just having like we can't do it alone, but I am ready for it with like the community, like with the, in the context that we have, which is like you know, a whole industry that is sort of behind us and on the same side. And
Hayden, that wasn't actually the last question. I was asking if you're ready for the last question. Here's the last question.
Hayden was just really saying he's ready
here's
to fight.
Here's the thing we want to know. I know you're ready for it, but the big question in our minds, in everyone's mind, is, are you going to win?
Yes. Yes, we are going to win. We plan to win. We have a, you know, we're on the right side of the law, and
We are excited about this. And I guess maybe in conclusion here, you've got a lot of people in obviously the Bankless community and the entire crypto community who has benefited from the open, permissionless, decentralized nature of Uniswap. Uniswap has never defrauded anyone. No one has lost any funds using this crypto tool. And because of its existence, I think it saved folks a lot of money and brought a lot of democratization to finance. Is there anything we can do to help you? Like, what do you need from the crypto community?
Honestly, just like keep spreading the good word, keep talking about, you know, the benefits of the technology. Just, you know, I already listened this morning to your previous coverage, which I thought was really good and really appreciated. So, you know, honestly, just like keep up what you do and keep kind of like sharing. And I think like definitely like there's this, you know, leaning into the what I was talking about earlier around like continuing to like build bridges and continuing to explain like the technology and how it benefits people, which is what you guys do, but like just like really leaning into that, you know, and making the case to the world, to the American people, and as opposed to like there's sort of this like tendency sometimes for crypto to like want to just like be like fighting all the time. And fighting is good. We want to fight with, you know, the right people. And then we also want to build bridges with the right people and kind of show up really well in the world. And I think you guys do a good job of that, but just continuing to kind of like elevate the, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Regulators on the podcast. Hester Peirce has been on so many times. She's engaged with the community. Gary Gensler, you're welcome to come on as well. Let's have a discussion,
Gary,
about this.
Just come into the podcast.
Hayden, thank you
so much.
Come
in and register.
I got to end with this. We are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot. Take him to court.
Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game 7 for Web3 gaming and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle.
Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi. And with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC-20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation.